of Jesus. We call that story the Good Samaritan. And before you leave, we got a little video to introduce that to you.
God's story, the Good Samaritan. So part of God's story is about a Good Samaritan, and it goes like this. When Jesus lived on earth, he often told stories to teach us things. Stories that teach a lesson are called parables. One day, Jesus told a parable about a good guy from a place called Samaria, a Good Samaritan, to a group of Jewish people. It all started when a Jewish expert in the law asked Jesus, "What must I do to receive eternal life?" Basically, he was asking, "What do I have to do to be perfect?" Since this guy was an expert in the law, he thought he already knew how to be perfect because he knew all the rules. He just wanted to see what Jesus would say. Of course, Jesus knew what the man was thinking, so he asked him, "What is written in the law?" The man said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. Love him with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as you love yourself." So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus answered him by telling this story. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Everybody listening was Jewish, and they could probably all picture the exact road Jesus was talking about. He continued, "A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. You might expect a priest, who was supposed to serve God, to help, but he didn't stop. Then Jesus said, "A Levite came to the place and saw him, but he passed by on the other side too." Levites were assistants to priests, so maybe you'd expect them to help too, but he didn't stop either. Finally, Jesus said, "A Samaritan came along." Remember, a Samaritan is a person from Samaria. That's near Israel, where God's family, the Jews, lived. But here's the thing, Jews and Samaritans didn't get along. In fact, nobody hearing this story would ever expect a Samaritan to help, because Samaritans and Jews couldn't stand each other. But Jesus said, when the Samaritan saw the man, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out money and gave it to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will pay you back for any extra expense you have." Then Jesus asked, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law didn't even want to say the word Samaritan, but he admitted, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." In other words, go and love everyone, even people we don't like or people who everybody else wants to avoid. See, when we show love, we're obeying Jesus. Obeying God doesn't mean just doing what his rules say. It means loving him more than anything and showing his love to every single person that we meet. And that's the story of the Good Samaritan.
Well, that is a good story, isn't it? All right, kids, 2 years old to sixth grade, you can be dismissed to your classes. A good story for us adults also, isn't it? I mean, we need to think about those things. We were studying that in our adult Bible class. It meets at 9 a.m., so you can be here at 9 a.m., and we're going to be studying things like that as well. But Happy New Year to you. I was gone last week. Thanks to Basil for filling in for me and getting us off to a good start. But each year, we want the year to get off to a good start. And one way we do that is with our Covenant Sundays. So next week is our annual Covenant Sunday. It's going to be a little bit different. Normally, we dismiss everyone and they gather around tables with the elders. We'll have tables up with the covenant stones that we will distribute on that day. We're going to have to just do it a little bit differently, but I know it's going to be a great time of reflection, of recommitment, and you'll be blessed. You'll be blessed by being here, especially on Covenant Sunday. For those of us that are watching online, we're going to have those covenant stones available for you during this week from Monday to Friday during office hours. And so if you want to come down to the church office and pick up your covenant stone in advance, you can have those with you while you're watching with us next Sunday during our Covenant Sunday. One thing I do ask is we have a limited supply of the covenant stones, and so one per family, and there's only members of the Park Avenue Church of Christ. If we have some left over after next week or after we get all of our church family taken care of, then we'll see if we have some that we can distribute to your friends, relatives, and things like that. But next week is Covenant Sunday, and the theme for Covenant Sunday is going to come from Hebrews chapter 12, in verse 2, keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes, or fix your eyes on Jesus, or simply eyes on Jesus. And so before we talk about that, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2, I want us to look at verse 1. So turn in your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at this great chapter in the New Testament. In fact, during the month of January, from today to January 31st, I want to challenge every one of us to read Hebrews chapter 12 every day of the week. And if you can't get to the whole chapter, then read verses 1 through 3. I really think these words, just like any portion of the Bible, any portion of God's Word is going to bless us. Hebrews chapter 12 is going to be a blessing to you in the times that we live in, to keep you on track, to keep your eyes on Jesus, and just to focus on Him and interpret everything that's happening in this world and in your life based on the life and the example of Jesus. So Hebrews chapter 12, let's make that our chapter of January, our chapter of the month. To make it easier for you, if you have your church app, if you click the little button more, then I have a link there, Hebrews chapter 12. You can just click on that, and it takes you to Bible Gateway, one of the internet resources for Bibles and Bible study. And so you can just go to that. I mean, it'll be easy, easy peasy, right? To get to Hebrews chapter 12. And another way that you can be reminded, every time you see the number 12, all right, so you check your watch, you check your phone, and it's 1:12. Let that be a reminder to you. Man, I need to read Hebrews chapter 12. All during the noon hour, man, you look at your clock, you look at your phone, it's 12-something. Hey, I need to read Hebrews chapter 12. Wherever you see the number 12, let that be a reminder to you to read Hebrews chapter 12. So let the Word set itself on your heart. All right, before we get to Hebrews chapter 12, and in verse 2, I want us to set that up with Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 1. And let's look at what that says. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Isn't that an incredible verse? A beautiful verse. This verse has special significance to me. When I was young, a young teenager, a young believer, a young follower of Jesus, one of my first real Bibles was a New American Standard Bible. This was before the NIV took off in 1978, and so it must have been 75, 76, something like that. I don't know exactly, but one of my first real Bibles was a New American Standard Bible, just the New Testament. But on the cover of that New Testament was this verse, "Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." And on the cover of that Bible, there was this athlete who was running, a long-distance runner, and I'll forever have that image on my mind when I look at this verse. It is a powerful verse reminding us that we are all in this race. Hebrews chapter 12 begins with the word, therefore. And whenever you see the word, therefore, I was always told to ask yourself, what is it therefore? It's there for a reason. That connective word refers us back to Hebrews chapter 11. So before we get to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2, and even before we get to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, I think we really need to at least consider briefly what the author here says in Hebrews chapter 11. Now, Hebrews chapter 11 has to be one of your favorite chapters in the Bible. I mean, it's the hall of faith. I mean, if Hebrews chapter 11 isn't one of your favorite chapters in the Bible, then I have to question whether or not you're a Christian at all. I mean, this is a powerful list of all of those Old Testament characters that have gone on before us. It's story after story of faith. Well, why the stories? Why does this author, and we don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews, why does this author recall all of these heroes from the Old Testament? It's not just a history lesson. It's not just a quiz to see if we remember all of these Bible stories that you've studied as a kid. But the author of this book is telling stories because the recipients of this book are getting tired. They're getting weary. Their race is getting hard. Now, I'm not much of a runner, but I know about the Boston Marathon. Even if you're not a marathoner, you know about the most famous marathon in the world, the Boston Marathon. Well, there's a section in the Boston Marathon that's called Heartbreak Hill. It's about 20 miles into the race. And at 20 miles, it's a 26-mile race, man, at 20 miles, you are already struggling, but then you hit Heartbreak Hill, and most of the marathoners say that that is the most difficult part of the Boston Marathon. If you can make it through Heartbreak Hill, that ascent, then, man, the rest is just downhill from there. I suspect that the original recipients of the book of Hebrews, they have hit Heartbreak Hill. Their race is getting difficult. They need some encouragement. So the author says, look at all of these other people who have run the race. They finished the race. They're inspiration to you to continue the race that you are involved in. Have you ever hit Heartbreak Hill? Man, have you ever gotten to the point in your life, in your race as a Christian, and you're saying to yourself, I don't know if I can go any further. I mean, life hasn't gotten any harder than it has right now. And for a lot of us, 2020 and even 2021 is our heartbreak hill. But people, these heartbreak hills can appear at any time in our life. You never know when it's going to happen. It can appear at any time because life is hard, the race can be long, and we all need encouragement. And that is one of the purposes of this book, Hebrews. It's written to Jewish believers. That's why it's called Hebrews. It's written to Jewish believers. Man, they're just getting tired. They're getting weary. The race has gotten long. And so this author, one of the purposes of this book is to encourage people to continue running the race. And one way that the author does that, as you read through the entire book of Hebrews, you'll find a Greek tense, verb tense, that's called the hortatory subjunctive. Let me just break that down for you. Hortatory means to exhort, to encourage someone. The subjunctive voice in the Greek is, it's not certain, it's not a command, but it's hopeful. And most often, this Greek verb form is translated in the book of Hebrews, let us. And so we see that often in the book of Hebrews. 19 times we see that verb tense translated, let us. Let me show you one place, and we're going to see it here in Hebrews chapter 12. But let's look back at Hebrews chapter 10 and in verse 22. And you can hear the concern that the author has for the recipients and the encouragement that he is giving to these people to continue in the race. And so in Hebrews chapter 12, he says, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart. Don't give up on drawing near. Let us continue to do that. In verse 23, let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess. Verse 24, let us consider how we may spur one another on to good deeds. So all of this let us in the book of Hebrews. In fact, some people call this the salad subjective. There's a lot of let us in the book of Hebrews. In fact, let me just challenge you. Every time you see a head of lettuce, I want you to think of the encouragement that comes from the book of Hebrews. Let us, he's encouraging us. The author is cheering on the readers. He's saying, don't give up. He's saying, you can do this. And in chapter 11, he calls to the stage one person after another who is cheering on each and every one of us to continue this race. And so he says, therefore, based on chapter 11, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, these people are cheering us on. These people have run the same race, and they are urging you to keep running. Now, no doubt, as the author talks about this race, he has in mind the Roman arenas of the day. They were oval tracks, much like our tracks at our high schools and our colleges and in our public parks. This oval track that was surrounded by these stands. And it may be that the author has in mind that we are running this race, and in the stands are all of these great people of faith that are urging us on by their example, by their voices that still speak to us, saying, keep running the race that is marked before you. And so he envisions Abel, he envisions Enoch, he envisions Noah, Abraham in the stands, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Rahab, David, Samuel, and a host of other people who are in these stands encouraging us to continue running the race. Let me tell you, people, it is so important for us to know those stories from the Old Testament. It is so important for us to see how other people persevere. It's so important for us as parents to tell our stories, those kids, to have them in our Bible classes and to remind them of all of the people that have gone on before us. In fact, Paul in Romans chapter 15 and in verse 4, he says, you know, everything that was written for our instruction, was written for our encouragement so that we can have this perseverance. Back to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. Therefore, based on what was written in Hebrews chapter 11, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, throwing off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles us, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. All right, English teachers, I hope I get this right. If you were to diagram this sentence, the subject and verb would simply be let us run, or it's the first person plural, we run, or that subjective case, we should run. I mean, that's a sentence. We run, we should run, let us run. We are runners. Now, when I see someone running, usually I associate that with some type of purpose. They're going somewhere. They're exerting a little bit more effort. There's some type of urgency to it. When I see someone running, I think to myself, I may even say to that person, why are you running? What's going on? What's so necessary that you have to put yourself in that type of motion? I think the author here is saying that we are runners. You are a runner. We move. That's what we do as disciples of Jesus Christ. There is no watching. Christianity is not a spectator sport. I'm sure we need rest now and then, and that's a principle of the Bible as well. But we run. That's what we are. We're runners. Disciples need to be in purposeful motion. In purposeful motion. And we need to run with perseverance. It's going to be tired. Running is tiring. It's exhausting. There's a myth that I have to battle about life almost every day. Is I want life to be easy. I want life to be a stroll in the park. I want my path to be straight all the time. I want to be able to see exactly where I'm going. I want life to be easy. But when I read Hebrews chapter 12, it seems to be saying that the author is indicating that life is not just a stroll in the park. The life of a disciple is a life of purposeful motion. You run. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be exhausting. And that's why we see in the New Testament so many verses that call us to endure, to persevere. Don't become weary in well-doing. It's supposed to be tiring. It's supposed to be a race. It's supposed to be exhausting. But sometimes we make it harder than we have to. So I think the author is going to give us some ways to make this run more pleasant, more exhilarating. I do not like to run. I used to like to run more. But even when I was younger, when I would run in sports, I never just liked to run. But there are some people who love to run. And honestly, they kind of drive me crazy, you know? You know, love to them, but there are some people, I mean, they go out on their runs, and then after that run, they're going to post a selfie, you know? They look so exhilarated. Yeah, you know who you are. I'm pointing right over here. Love you, brother. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? It seems as if they really enjoy this. How do they feel so great? It's so hard, but it is so exhilarating. I think I have a picture of what I would look like after a long run. Yeah, run harder, they say. They'll be fine, they said. I mean, that's what happens to me. But I'm thinking, am I making my spiritual race more difficult? Can I run this spiritual race, and instead of just feeling exhausted all the time, can I be one of those persons who just feels exhilarated while I run? And here's the thing. We don't need to run harder. We need to run smarter. I want to feel that spiritual exhilaration. I want to feel charged up after I've been serving the Lord. And so how are we supposed to do this? Jesus said in Matthew 11, verse 30, he says, my yoke is easy. My burden is light. Really? And I think that what he's saying, if you really embrace everything about the gospel of Jesus Christ, you're going to be able to be one of those persons, spiritually speaking, that you're going to be exhausted, but you're also going to be exhilarated. So I think the author here gives us some insight. How can I make this race a little bit easier? So number one, I think he says you need to run with other people. You run with other people. He says, let us. It's the first person plural. It's we. It's us. We're running together. We work with other people. It is so easy to isolate, isn't it? It's so easy to isolate ourselves, especially in this day and time, even before COVID. I mean, it's so easy to isolate ourselves in our comfortable homes with our big screen TVs and just stay to ourselves. And that makes it harder. You need to be involved with other people. As Lance said, let me just contribute to this, is to get into discipleship-making community. I mean, run with other people. Let us run with perseverance. And when we're running with other people, you know it's going to make it a little bit easier for you to complete the race that is set out before you. So come to church. And again, that's kind of preaching to the choir because you're at church, you're watching online. But come to church, go to Bible class, be with other Christians. Associate with others in this race. Jesus said, wherever two or three are gathered, there I am in your midst. There's something about us being together that is going to unleash that exhilarating feeling that comes with that spiritual race that we're involved in. To our online audience, I'm so impressed that you are with us. It would be so easy for you on a cold January day to say, man, I'm just going to sit back and maybe I'll catch it later on. It's going to be on these different platforms. But it's so impressive that you said, man, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to tune into the Park Avenue Church of Christ at 10 a.m. because I know that as we worship together, that's going to make my life a little bit easier. That's going to help me run the race. I'm so glad that all of you are here this morning attending church because this is going to make your life easier. This is going to help you in that race. This is going to turn that exhaustion into exhilaration. So being here today, you are in the right place. You're making your race a little bit easier by joining other people. So run with other people. Second thing, ditch the extra weight. Therefore, based on these examples that we have, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. There's probably things that you are running with that is making your race a lot more difficult. In the ancient Roman world, runners would arrive with long flowing robes, and then when the race was about to begin, they would take off those robes so that they could run unimpeded. And as I think about that, I think of boxing matches, you know, those Rocky movies. Rocky comes in and he's got this big robe on. But what does he do? He takes it off so that he can fight the fight. I think of baseball and pitchers in the dugout. I mean, they have their warm-up jackets. Now, they want to keep that arm warm, but when they go out to pitch, they take that jacket off because they want to be able to throw unencumbered. I think of basketball players. You know, they check into the game and they rip off those warm-ups so they can go in the game unencumbered. And that's what the author is saying. You need to get rid of some things in your life because they are making you exhausted. What's weighing you down? What is weighing you down? Maybe it's bad companions. Maybe it's unhealthy habits. Maybe it's just laziness. Things that are making your race more difficult. And he's specific here. He says there's sin in our lives and that sin is weighing you down. Now, oftentimes we think of sin is just, man, God is mad at me. It separates us from God. It's a bad thing to do. It's not right. That's all true about sin. But the author here brings another dimension into sin. Sin is actually making you exhausted spiritually. It's making your race more difficult than it needs to be. Makes us spiritually tired. So Colossians chapter 3, I have this projected here. Paul is not afraid. He says, I got a list for you. Now, here are some things. Here are some sins that are common to just about everyone that are making you exhausted. You're making your life more difficult. So he gives a list. Get rid of, and he uses that same word. That's the same Greek word there, rid yourself, as the Hebrew writer uses when he says cast off or cast aside. So get rid of these things, anger, slowing you down. It is slowing you down. It is exhausting you when you live in anger, in rage. It's like you've got this weight on you, this malice. Man, these bad feelings that we have towards other people that we keep in our hearts, that malice, it is slowing you down. And watching the news and seeing all of that malice, that is slowing you down. Fix your eyes on Jesus. We'll talk more about that next week. But all that stuff, all that junk, all that garbage is slowing you down. All that hatred that we have for other people, slowing us down. Slander, talking about other people, it's slowing you down. It's making your race more difficult. Filthy language, it's slowing you down. It's like a weight that is around your neck. Don't lie to one another. You've taken off the old self and you've put on the new self. And then look what he says. It's being renewed in the knowledge, in the image of its creator. As we take those things off, we're getting that energy and that renewal from God. Peter, another apostle, 1 Peter 2:1, therefore rid yourself, there's that same word, uses a lot of these same things, this malice and this deceit and hypocrisy. It is wearing you out. It is wearing you out, faking who you are. It is exhausting trying to be 2, 3, 4 different people. Hypocrisy is weighing you down. Envy. Man, I wish I could have what they have. I wish I could be what they are. It's weighing you down. Put it aside. And slander of every kind. And these things, they so can easily trip us up, and we think, man, I can run my race, I can have a little hate, a little malice, a little slander, I can handle those things, it's not going to, but it can be the smallest thing in your life. You know, when you're walking or you're running, isn't it amazing? There's just a tree root or just a change in the topography can make you stumble in your race. Several weeks ago, I flew up to Indiana. That's where my daughter lives with her family, Melanie. And we're going to drive down to Texas. They were going to visit us and stay for Thanksgiving. And so I volunteered to drive down with them, flew up to Indiana. It is a long drive. It is a long race with a 4- and 6-year-old in the back as well. That's why I volunteered to drive most of the time. I'll drive. This is fine. I'll do that. So we're driving through Illinois, and let's stop at a rest area. Let's get out, stretch our legs, had to use the facilities, get a snack, whatever it is. And so we're out there. It's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. My 4- and 6-year-old grandson, I said, well, let's play a little bit. Let's run. Let's run a little bit. Play. And they like to play freeze tag. And so we start playing freeze tag, and I have now learned that I'm not as fast as a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. I can't run the race like I used to. But man, I was trying. And so I was running after Jace, and I was right there to get him. And I don't know what it was. I tripped, and I fell right on my face. But I did reach out and touch Jace as I was falling. And as I was falling, I just touched the back of his heel, and he fell down. And so he's crying. I'm trying not to cry. I feel like crying. But it was just the littlest thing. I didn't see anything. I didn't know what it was, but it tripped me up. And people, there are things in your life we really need to inspect our lives. There are things in your life, I know it. There are things in my life, I know it, that is making this race more difficult than it has to be. Cast them off. Get rid of them. And start opening up that exhilaration that God wants you to feel in running this race. All right, so what have we said? We need to, what was the first point? How soon we forget. Yeah, run with others, thank you. Someone's listening. Run with others, ditch the extra weight, and then he says, I want you to see the markers along the way. Therefore, man, if you read this verse every day, it is going to empower you, all right? If you read this verse, if you just read Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, it's going to empower you. Therefore, and you're going to remember Hebrews chapter 11, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, it's going to be a reminder to throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And then he says, let us run with perseverance the race that has been marked out for us. It has been marked out, which means someone has designed that race. Someone has gone through that path and left you markers. Like I said, I'm not much of a runner. I've run a few 5Ks. It's always nice, because usually when I run a 5K, I usually end up all by myself. Everyone else has gone before me. But it's always nice as I'm running one of those races to see some indication that I'm on the right track. Some little arrow, some little sign, go this way. Or even a little sign that says, man, you're at marker 3K, you got 2 more to go, whatever it may be. It reminds me that someone has gone before you. Henry and I, a couple months ago, went to southeastern Oklahoma, to Beaver's Bend, And so we said, let's go hiking. It was a beautiful day. We go hiking in the park there. And so, we got the maps out. You know, those maps make it look a lot easier. those maps make it look like, just around the corner is your destination. So we're hiking, and occasionally we'll see some people, but we're in a section where we didn't see anybody. We were out there all by ourselves. And the path, it wasn't really well defined. And so we were getting a little bit scared. This Yankee did not want to get lost in southeastern Oklahoma, all right? But every once in a while, we see that someone had been before us and they hammered onto a tree just a little arrow, reminding us that we're going the right way and giving us some direction along the way. Someone has gone on before you. You are on the right path. There is a destination, but we need to see those markers. Maybe it's one of those heroes of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. I would like to think that these great people of faith have kind of left little notes for us along the way to encourage us, little markers to let us know that the race is worth running. Maybe it's Abraham. Maybe you need to see the marker that Abraham has left on your race. Maybe he's saying to you, man, God made a promise to me, and it didn't come true. And I was living my life as if God is never going to fulfill that promise. And I even tried to fulfill it for him and ended up messing up my life. Really, I learned a lesson there. But maybe Abraham just leaves a little note for you. Believe in the promise. When God makes a promise, he's going to fulfill it. Or maybe Moses has left a little note for you. Maybe you need to read his note. And he says, man, I ran away after I killed a person. And I thought God was through with me. I went to the furthest place that I could imagine just to get away from everyone. But then one day, God came to me in a burning bush and he says, you know what, I've got a mission for you. Maybe you need to hear that note. God can still use you. Or maybe it's David, King David. Maybe he's left a note that you need to see. And David is saying, you know what, I profess to be a follower of God, and it kills me just to think about what I've done. I took another man's wife. And then with the power that I had, I made sure that he was eliminated. I killed a man. And man, I struggled with that for so long. But then I found a God who says, you know what, my love and my grace is greater than your sin. No matter what you have done, David is telling you that God still loves you and invites you back in. Maybe it's Rahab. Imagine the note that she would have left. She said, man, I thought so little of myself that I sold myself to men. But then one day, just an ordinary day, these Jewish people come and they start talking to me about this God who loves, this God who forgives. And now I find my value, not in selling myself, but I find my value and I feel love from the God, the creator of all the heavens. Maybe it's Joseph who's left you a little note, Patriarch Joseph. You've been abandoned by your family. My brother sold me into slavery. You've been abandoned by friends. I had some friends who forgot all about me, ended up in jail. They didn't even say anything. And I had these dreams, and I thought, God, when are these dreams going to come true? And at times, I thought they were never going to come true, but you know what they did? I kept doing the right thing. All these little signs are left behind to encourage us, and they make the race a little bit easier, don't they? They make the race a little bit easier. So Christian, whether you're on Heartbreak Hill, whether you just started this race, whether it's sunny or it's rainy, no matter what the conditions are, keep running this life of faith. It's worth running. It is worth running. And one day, you will come to the end of this race. and you're going to take a selfie. And you'll be surrounded by all of those people who have run the race before you. People like Moses and David and Samuel and Rahab. Your mother, your grandfather. Other people who have run that race that are waiting for you at the finish line. And in that selfie, you're going to have a crown on your head. The crown that was given to the victor in the games. And in that selfie, you're going to have a smile on your face that will never, ever go away. Run with perseverance. Run with the knowledge that it is your God and your Father who is strengthening and empowering you in this race. Let's read this together. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let's stand together and sing.
Strength will rise as we wait.